Okay, first and foremost, we want to wish happy birthday to Reuven Frank. Yeah. How old are you, Reuven? Okay, so we got the right guy here. So, seems like we were just here, no? Okay, so we talked yesterday. We said that we're going to elaborate a little bit on one of the topics. We said that there are three basic universal drives that people have. If you understand the essence of what a person is seeking, then it's as we say, axiomatic, obvious, pashut, self-evident that what people are really looking for is a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Pleasure, they want the maximum pleasure. What's the maximum pleasure? It's really Avas Hashem. People want to be good. What's good? It's the Ratzon Hashem. People want meaning. Meaning is eternity. That's Nitzchias, that's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That ultimately, all of the desires and all of the yearnings of people, if they would really understand themselves, they would realize that what they're ultimately looking for is a relationship, a Keshra to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So we're going to elaborate on the first one, the issue of pleasure. So I told you that, first of all, there's a big misconception. People think that somehow the notion of striving to have hana and fulfillment is antithetical. That's a college word. It means against Yiddishkeit, against Torah. But I quoted yesterday that the Mesillas Yesharim says that it's the very first parak of Mesillas Yesharim, which is what is a person's obligation in this world. It says, Adam lo nivra, a person was not created, ela lisanig al Hashem v'lehenus mizishkin aso. There is no second purpose. He writes it, Adam lo nivra ela, to make sure. There's many important mitzvahs, Talmud Torah Kenegu Kulam, Shabbos, Avis Reim, Zeklau Gadol B'Torah. There are many, many important mitzvahs, but there's only one purpose. All of those mitzvahs are a means to accomplishing the purpose. What does the Kadosh Baruch Hu want for us? Pleasure. What pleasure? The maximum pleasure. And one dugma that we give to try to bring it home to people is that we refer to Kadosh Baruch Hu as Avinu Avarachaman. He is our Father in Heaven, right? So if you think about it, Hashem has an imagination. You look at the world, all the flowers and all the bugs and all the fish and all the creatures in the sea. I mean, you see, Kadosh Baruch Hu has a tremendous imagination, you know, the things you never would have dreamed of. And Hashem could have brought people into the world many different ways. He didn't have to have parents. That's how he decided to do it. He didn't have to have parents. It could be that children, it could be that Baruch that it could be that children would grow on trees. You want to have a boy, there's a certain pardes, a boy orchard, you walk out there, oh yeah, that's a really nice looking one. You take it off a tree, you take it, oh, you have a boy, you have a daughter. People could be like amoebas, you know, you study a little biology, amoebas, you know, they reproduce themselves. You don't have to have parents. But Hashem says, listen, to understand reality, every human being needs parents. They understand reality, you need parents. Why? Because to understand what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants for us, you have to understand what parents want for us. What do our parents want for us? Our pleasure. How do you know? Because every single child that walks the face of this earth, they could be in Puerto Rico, they could be in Tel Aviv, they could be in Mea Shearim, they could be in Muncie, even Flatbush. Yeah? Even. That they all use the same method when they want to get something from their parents that their parents are refusing to give them. What is that method? That depends how old you are. When you're 3 years old, what is the method you use? You cry, a temper tantrum. This is outrageous. On the floor, banging your fists, hitting your parents. You hate me. Crying. Now, when you're 17 or 18, you can't exactly do a temper tantrum, so it's done with more style. But the same basic point. The same basic point. I won't speak to you. I'm not going to be that nice to you. I'm not that warm. Letting you know I'm not happy. As a teenager, as an adolescent. A little more sophistication. Same point. Why is it that every kid deploys the same method? Same method. They don't get together and say, you know, this really works. Try this. They all know intuitively this is the way. Could be a guy in Puerto Rico, a Jew in Muncie. Same derech. Why is that? Because you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out, what do my parents want from me? They want my pleasure. What's the best way to get them over a barrel? Withhold pleasure. Drives parents crazy. Because their whole mahus, their whole desire is that their children should be happy and fulfilled and energized and alive and joyful. And if you hold that back, they want to respond to it. How can I fix this? What can I do? What could be done? You hear? Avinu Avrahaman. We have parents to teach us. What does the Almighty want for us? Pleasure. The whole purpose of existence is how much pleasure can you get? How much pleasure can you get? Now, I'll tell you a story. When I was a kid, it was a few years ago, when I was a younger person, I was 19, that I was traveling around the whole world. And I came from Toronto, I was in Toronto, and I decided I was going to go, I was going to take a year off, I was going to see the world. Back then, people did that. Today, you know, it's birthright. You know, it's about as adventurous as people get, you know. 10 days on birthright. But back then, people traveled the world. They took time off. They traveled around the world. I'm in Rabbi Centers. I'll call you in 20 minutes. Part two. Bye. It's my wife. So I was traveling, and my dream. And I was a Canadian. You know, Canadians are passionate about
hockey.
Not much, besides.
Moose.
Besides. They're passionate about hockey and beer. That's about it. But Baruch Hashem, right now, they have a very good prime minister who's a real pro-Israel advocate, like big time. Let me just turn this on 1 second. So I decided that I was gonna travel the world. And I wanted to play hockey in Europe. I was a hockey player. And I decided I was going to try to play hockey in Europe. And I was interested in going to play, try to figure out a way to play in Switzerland. But, you know, Switzerland is very expensive. I didn't have any money. I was a kid. It's very expensive. So someone told me that if you go to Israel, they have a thing called a kibbutz. You go to Israel, you work on a kibbutz. And if you work, they'll give you free room and board. So you can spend the summer in Israel, and then when that's over, you can go back to Europe and try to figure out things from there. I figured, great. Sounds great. So for that, the only reason why I went to Israel, came to Israel, was because it was a cheap place to stay, so I could go back to Europe to play hockey and ski. That's the only reason why. I never would have come to Israel. I went to a kibbutz near Haifa called Shar HaMakim, which is a Shomer HaTzair kibbutz. If you know, Shomer HaTzair is... they're like left-wing communists. They're the last communists in the world. You know, the Russians realize it doesn't work. You know, Jews, they're hanging tough. They're still communists. So I was working on this kibbutz, and I got a job. You know, they had a cotton field, working in the cotton field, big deal. You know, driving a tractor, that was a big job. And I get a letter. This is a long time ago. This is 1979. There's no email. There's no internet. It's a different world. You know, you wrote letters. So I get a letter from a friend of mine I went to high school with, and he tells me, you're never going to believe what happened. This guy that he went to camp with went to Yerushalayim and got caught up in this crazy ultra-Orthodox cult, and now he's studying yeshiva, he's becoming a frum Jew, an Orthodox Jew. His parents are worried sick, they don't know what to make of this. Okay, fine. A few weeks later, I got another letter. The story gets more dramatic. He's supposed to come home to start college, and he told his parents he's not coming home. He's spending a year in this ultra-Orthodox yeshiva learning Torah. And this is like completely over the top. No one ever heard of this. Bizarre. And they're worried sick. You know, he's in a cult. He's being brainwashed. What's going to be? I got one other letter about him, progress report. And then the summer went by, and it was late September. And that week was Yom Kippur. And the way it would work is every Sunday they would give you out the luach, the work schedule for the week. And that week, let's say Yom Kippur was on a Wednesday. Wednesday was a work day. Even though it was Yom Kippur, it was a work day. They didn't celebrate Yom Kippur b'chlal. So I went to the manager, the head of the of the volunteer. I said, you know, listen, you know, in Toronto, we went to shul for a couple hours at least, you know, something. Here it's nothing, ephes, zero. So you know what? You owe me a lot of vacation days. I'm going to go to Yerushalayim for Yom Kippur. Take a day off. I'll go to Yerushalayim for Yom Kippur and experience Yom Kippur in Yerushalayim. And I had two friends who were studying at Hebrew University. So I went, they got me a room, and one of them said to me, he says, listen, you know, I have my first time in Yerushalayim. I've been in Israel for about 3-4 months. It was my first time in Yerushalayim. I was a chayfer the whole time. So he says to me, look, I'll show you around. I'll show you around Yerushalayim. But first I have to give a package to my cousin who happens to learn in a yeshiva in the old city. So just drop off the package, if you don't mind, and then I'll show you around. I was great, very interested. And I didn't say anything to him. I said I was actually very curious to meet a yeshiva bacher because I never met an Orthodox Jew. And I saw these, you know, I'm thinking Hasidim and guys with long black coats and black hats and big beards. I'm thinking like, okay, you know, I'd like to really find out, like a little, I like to be like, what makes these guys tick? Like, what are these guys all about? These are like from Mars to me, like another planet. I'd like to, you know, ask them, at least, you know, what's doing with the White Sox? Like, what's the whole thing about? So we go into the old city, and we go into this yeshiva, and we knock on the door, and this guy asks for his cousin. We're waiting there, and out comes this guy who's dressed very American, a little disappointed. This is obviously his cousin. I figure maybe he knows one of these ultra-Orthodox Jews. And he comes over to me and says, nice to meet you. My name is Philip Shore. I said, wow, you're the guy in the letters. I'm going to save you. Get your passport. I'm going to take you out here. We're going to go straight to the Canadian Embassy. I'm going to take you home. He says, what are you talking about? I said, I got letters from our mutual friend, Stephen. I never knew this guy, Stephen. He told me you're in this cult. What's going on? He says, what are you talking about? Cult? Here, brainwashed here by force? I'm studying here because I want to be here. I said, really? You want to be in yeshiva? I said, what's your background? He had less background than I did. I said, I don't know. How could it be possible that you would want to study in an Orthodox yeshiva? You're a normal, healthy young man. What are you doing in yeshiva? This is bizarre to me. He says, it's not what you think. It's not what you think. It's not like Hebrew school. It's very interesting. It's very meaningful. It's very relevant. He says, why don't you come to a class? And you'll see. I said, okay, I'll go to a class. So I go to a class. It was in this, you know, cave. That's what Eshetar was back. It was Eshetar back in the day. This cave in the old city. And I'm sitting around. There's a bunch of other people there. All people, you know, traveling the world. Not religious people, basically secular people. And in walks the rabbi. Rabbi Noach Weinberg Zitzal. I said, oh, here's the real McCoy. You know, he had the black suit. He had the big black hat. He had a long white beard. Okay, now we're going to hear from a real ultra-Orthodox Jew. And he looks around the room, which was his typical fashion. He says, I see there's some people here for the first time. You're here for the first time? You have to leave yeshiva. You're here for one class? The most important lesson that you should take with you is what do the Jewish people say? What does the Torah say is the purpose of existence? That's the most important thing to know. You have to understand, what are we doing here? What's the point of it all? So I'm thinking, what's he going to say? Shabbos. Kashrus. You know, what, I didn't know what he was going to say, but I figured it's going to be something oppressive. You know what I mean? I don't know what he's going to say. So he turns to him and he says, the Torah explains that Hashem made the world for one single purpose, one purpose only. What's that? To give mankind, his children, pleasure. That's the purpose of life. Pleasure. Now you have to understand, when he said that, it was like somebody completely cut me in half. Because I said to myself, that's exactly what I say the purpose of life is. Got to have a good time. Pleasure. So you got to get the scene. Here's this very powerful, big Orthodox rabbi, black suit, white beard. I had very long hair, shoulder-length hair, cut-off t-shirt, cut-off shorts, no socks, for sure. And I look at me, I look at him, and I say to myself, you know what? One of us is making a big mistake. Making a big mistake. And then he went on to explain what is the Jewish people, what is the Torah's version or view of pleasure. And I realized, you know what? these guys, they've got more wisdom, more figured out on what I think I'm an expert in than I, you know, I can't hold a candle to these guys. The end of the story is that I it was very interesting. I realized, you know, even that one class, there's more here than I thought. There's like some real depth, and maybe you could really help me. I had no interest in being from, of course, but maybe there's wisdom here that you could grow from. And I decided that between kibbutz and going back to Europe, I had about a 2-week window of time. I was going to come back to yeshiva and study for 2 weeks with the rabbi, and then I'll go back to Europe. I went back to my kibbutz, and I had a roommate who was an Australian guy who grew up as a Roman Catholic, and he was completely turned off of religion. He had a very negative experience with religion, the church, the whole thing, and he's working on me. He's telling me, this is baloney. I know these rabbis. They're like the priests. They're all full of baloney. They don't know what they're talking about. They're snake oil salesmen. You know, that means that it's like, it's all sizzle. There's no substance. Forget about it. And he convinced me, I'm not going to go back. He's right. This is ridiculous. I'm not going to yeshiva. What are these guys going to teach me? I decided I'm not going to go back. Go back. I'll finish my time in the kibbutz. I'm going to go back to Europe, do my thing. Remember, I met this fellow, Shor, heir of Yom Kippur. Okay? So Yom Kippur comes, then Sukkot. It's Bein HaZmanim in yeshiva. He decides that he's going to go back to his kibbutz. He was also on a kibbutz before he went to yeshiva. He's going to go back and visit his friends on kibbutz. And he's on the bus, and he's driving up north, and he drives by a sign on the road that says Shar HaMakim. And he says, hey, 2.5 weeks ago I met that guy Cooper Smith. He was on this kibbutz. You know what? I'm going to go visit him. Gets off the bus. Met me once for about an hour. Okay? Gets off the bus, looks me up on the kibbutz, and we spent several hours talking, and he reconvinced me that I should go to yeshiva. You get that? If he would not have gotten off the bus, there's not a chance I ever would have gone to yeshiva. He got off the bus, reconvinced me, I went to yeshiva, went to Eish HaTorah, stayed there for the last 35 years. You understand? I'm just pointing out to you that, you know, a little bit of a different agenda, that you don't know. You make a little step can do. You reach out to one Jew. You guys have cousins, neighbors, people on your block. You don't realize, you do one little thing, what that could turn into. You know, you don't realize. And this fellow Shor, his name is Ephraim Shor now, he and I work together in Eish HaTorah. We work together in Eish HaTorah. My office is here, his office is right beside me. You know, it's like one little effort could change a person's life. So what did Rabbi Weinberg teach over? So Rabbi Weinberg taught over in that class a 5-word statement from the Sefer HaChinuch. And this just shows you the godless of Rav Noach Weinberg. And in that chinuch it says that Avas Hashem is greater than Hakoyel. It's greater than everything. And then he lists 4 things. Osher, Banim, Kavod, Umemshala. From those 7 words, Be'erach, Rav Noach learned that all of life's pleasures can be categorized into 5 different categories. That all of the experiences that we call pleasure, if you understand them in their definitions, there's really 5 categories of pleasure. Osher, Banim, Kavod, Memshala, and Avas Hashem is the highest. 5 categories of pleasure. And he explained, from the bottom to the top, what is Osher? Osher is the baseline pleasure. The baseline pleasure. Every human being gets this pleasure. You don't have to be such a chacham or so sophisticated to get this pleasure. It's baseline pleasure. What is Osher? It's physical pleasure. What's the definition of physical pleasure? Any experience that you partake of with one of your 5 senses. You smell it, you drink it, you hear it, you taste it, or you touch it. Anything that you partake of with one of those senses, that's called physical pleasure. Now there's physical pleasure and there's physical pleasure. You could have a coffee, you like the hot water, the sugar, the milk, right? Then the caffeine gives you a little bit of energy if you use it right. Then there's having an enormous mansion as a home. That's even more. So even within physical pleasure, there's different experiences. There's different levels. Okay? That's the first thing. You need a definition. One of the challenges of getting pleasure is that every pleasure has a counterfeit experience that says, you're looking for fifth class pleasure? You want physical pleasure? Buy me. Invest in me. But it's a counterfeit. You invest in it, it doesn't leave you, bring you up. It doesn't energize you. It deflates you. That's the measure. Was this a real pleasure or a counterfeit? Real pleasure energizes you. You come to yeshiva, you're not feeling too good, you're tired, you're down, you're cranky, your kavrusa's annoying you, but you learn hard that Seder, and you learned, you go to lunch, you're energized, you're more alive than when you started Seder. Yeah? That's the sign that what you did is pleasurable. You invest in something that is a waste of time. It's butlanus. It doesn't, it's comfortable. You know, you pass the time, but it doesn't energize you. It leaves you flatlined. That's the sign. Pleasure, counterfeit. What's the counterfeit of physical pleasure? What's the counterfeit? There's an experience that says, physical pleasure, buy me. But it's a counterfeit. What is it? It's taiva. What's the difference between physical pleasure? We'll call that ta'anug, which is mutter, and sometimes chiyuvi. Like on Shabbos, we have an inyan of onik Shabbos. It's a chiyuv, right? And taiva, which is asur. It's a constant mitzvah. Lo sasurach relevavchem, v'yach einechem. Einechem is znus, is not to go after any taiva. It's asur all the time. What's the difference between these two things? One's mutter, and sometimes an obligation, and one is always usher. What's the difference? What's the difference between eating lunch, which is a ta'anug, or eating lunch, which is a taiva? It could be the same piece of schnitzel can be an appropriate pleasure or an inappropriate taiva. What defines what our interaction with the schnitzel is? What? And what's the difference in the intention? What does it mean, L'shem Shemayim? That's already a high level. Forget L'shem Shemayim for now. If you can get there, great. There's something even more basic than L'shem Shemayim. What?
Pleasure.
Pleasure. What's the pleasure, though? You can eat schnitzel as a means to experiencing life is beautiful, life is sweet, life is good. That's the baseline physical pleasure. Or you can pig out on the schnitzel for the oil and the breadcrumbs as a taiva, just to fill your stomach and to satisfy your hunger pangs. That's using the physical world as an end in and of itself. If you use a physical pleasure as a means to realizing life is beautiful, that is legitimate, and that's called ta'anug. If you use it as an end in and of itself, just to experience the physical for the sake of the physical, that's usur. Because a neshama should not be a cow. That's how cows eat grass. A human being should not act like a cow. It's demeaning. So when you go to lunch, right, you have to decide. You want to have pleasure or you want to have taiva. That's the decision. You understand? Means to an end. Life is beautiful. It's physical pleasure. End in of itself, it's taiva, it'll bring you down. You got it? Now this is the baseline pleasure. This is the first pleasure you gotta get every day. You gotta start your engines. Getting pleasure is like a rocket ship. You have to be very well developed to be able to start your day and jump to Avos Hashem. It's not simple to love God. It's very abstract, it takes a lot of work. You got to work your way up the ladder. So the first thing every day is you got to get physical pleasure. You take that shower, you put on your clean shirt, hopefully, right? You have breakfast. You got to get physical pleasure. You got to get it. It gives you a buoyancy. It begins to raise your energy level. It gives you some life. That's the beginning. One more important point. It's not so crucial for you guys, but in teaching secular people, it's very important to explain to these people that physical pleasure, that we're not the Christians. The Christians say physical pleasure is dirty, it's bad. Who is the ideal man and woman in the Catholic Church, anyways? Is the priest and the nun. What's unique about them? They never marry. Because indulging in your physical desires is demeaning. It's not considered to be holy. We say, what are you talking about? The Gemara, there's a Yerushalmi in Kedushin says that if there's a fruit in this world that you did not at least taste, then the Almighty has a taina on you. Because I made all these fruits for your pleasure. You don't like it, you don't have to eat it, but at least try it. You could be missing out on a beautiful pleasure I gave you. That's Jewish. What's the difference? They say, the Christians say, physical pleasure is dirty. Stay away from it. America broke away from the Catholic Church. You know, if you follow the story of American history, they broke away from Christian doctrine. It's a new America. Right? The pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. In America, if you're consenting adults, you can basically do whatever you want. Is America a happy place? If you evaluate the well-being of American society, are these people happy, fulfilled? You know how many people are on you know, psychopharma drugs for anxiety and mood you know, disorders? It's a multi-billion dollar industry. I have people committing suicide, therapy, alcoholism, drug abuse. This is not a happy place. Because Americans don't understand, they're living in taiva. They think, we can pursue pleasure. What does that mean? Go after the taiva. But it doesn't pay. It doesn't pay. Because first of all, it's only the fifth level of pleasure. And what they're doing is not even a pleasure. It's all the counterfeit. So of course they're miserable. Of course they're miserable. They're not getting real pleasure. They have the license to get pleasure. They don't have the wisdom to know what pleasure is. They're miserable. The Torah view is that physical pleasure is the appetizer of existence. You hear that line? You go to a fancy wedding, yeah? The very first course is sometimes, you know, it used to be, they give you the melon with the coconut sprinkles. You ever had that? So you're sitting there with your friend, and the guy goes, wow, that was some suda, huh? He says, what are you talking about? That's just the first course. That's the appetizer. You got the salad, the soup, the main. They got the dessert. It's getting warmed up here. The melon is just to get your taste buds engaged so you can enjoy the finer pleasures that are going to come. That's physical pleasure. If you live on melon, you'll be malnourished. You'll never be a strong, healthy person. If you live on physical pleasure, that's the heights of what you comprehend is fulfillment, you're going to be malnourished spiritually. Even if you're getting physical pleasure, never mind you're getting only the counterfeit, you'll never be fulfilled because it's only the baseline. So we're not the Christians that say it's dirty, stay away from it. And we're not the Americans that say that this is the be-all or end-all. We have the middle road. It's a pleasure, but it's only the beginning. It's only the baseline. It's the starting point to enable you to get to the higher levels of pleasure. 4, 3, 2, and 1. Which hopefully we'll do. I'm supposed to speak, I think, one more time. Does anybody know when?
Hopefully tomorrow.
No, not tomorrow.
Afternoon.
I don't know. So Mircham will finish the next time, right? But if you could ask that lady to email me, I don't know when I'm supposed to speak. Okay, sure.